Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 27th of April, Anno Domini 2013. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes Dave.
No, we got a complaint.
Uh-oh.
Already?
Well...
Steve
yes,
is shirking
Steve,
his duty.
Steve is somewhere in the Midwest.
You know
one step
he's
ahead of the
he's
law.
Listening.
You know he is.
And Steve, you messed up big
yes,
time.
Yes, you did.
We're
Make
not going to let you
there.
Slide on this. You send in Dennis to cover for you.
Which
we
is
appreciate
great.
Thank
that.
You. Thank you.
But you forgot one key thing, dude.
Dun dun dun.
Da da da. No donuts.
Oh no!
It was his donut week, and it's. It's a terrible thing.
Uh-huh.
That,
Steve, you're making me look bad.
You missed it.
Yeah,
and,
he is.
And we're blaming Dennis because
yep.
he didn't know.
Yep. Okay. No, go ahead with the news. Yep. I just had the event.
Yep. All right. I get it.
Oh, get it good. Out of the way.
Mm-hmm. Get it out of the way early.
Yep.
All right. The controversial cybersecurity bill known as the Cyber Information Sharing and Protection Act, or CISPA,
nice.
Which passed the House of Representatives last week, was shelved by the Senate. The bill would have allowed the federal government to share classified cyber threat information with companies, but it also provided provisions that would have allowed companies to share information about specific users with the government. Privacy advocates also worried that the National Security Administration would have gotten involved. We're not taking up the bill, the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee representative says. Staff and senators are divvying up the issues and the key provisions everyone agrees will be needed to be handled if we're going to strengthen cybersecurity. They'll be drafting separate bills. Senator Jay Rockefeller, Democrat of West Virginia, chairman of the committee, said the passage of CISPA was important, but said the bill's privacy protections are insufficient. That, coupled with the fact that President Barack Obama has threatened to veto the bill, had even CISPA's staunchest opponents, such as the American Civil Liberties Union, ready to bury CISPA and focus on future legislation. I think it's dead for now, said Michelle Richardson, legislative counsel with the ACLU. CISPA is too controversial. It's too expansive. It's just not the same sort of program contemplated by the Senate last year. We're pleased to hear the Senate will probably pick up where it left off last year. That's not to say Congress won't pass any cybersecurity legislation this year. Both Rockefeller and President Obama want to give American companies additional tools to fight back against cyber attacks from domestic and foreign hackers. Cybersecurity legislation in the Senate, such as the Cyber Security and American Cyber Competitiveness Act of 2013, has greater privacy protections than CISPA did. So the Senate wanted to give us more privacy, and the House wanted to give us less. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, what's more important, security or privacy? And your choices are security, privacy, both in equal measure, neither, and something else. I'll comment in the forums. So far, we have 26 people, most of whom believe that it's both in equal measures. Now, let me tell you about how the forum works. If you go to soundbites.org and you look at the far right-hand column, right under the donate button, you'll see the forums listed. Click on the forums, and it will take you to the forums. Duh. There's show discussion, and then right underneath that is poll discussion. So if you've got something to say about the poll, that's where you do it now. Nobody's discussed yet, but I'm sure they will at some point.
Oh, it's coming.
Because this is the sort of issue that our people feel passionate about. And so if you go to the poll comments, you look for this date and what's more important, security or privacy, you would just go into the poll discussion, which is the second one listed, and 27 April 13, what's more important, security or privacy, and you can leave your answer. And so That's our question to you, of course. Which is more important? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
I can agree with that third answer, both.
Do you?
Why?
Yeah. Why do you think that?
Just because there's too much information. Well, all right, let's put it this way. Can't blame some folks just put too much information out there.
True.
That's just a fact of life.
For better or for worse, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and it's out there. I mean, let's face it. You can find out probably, and a lot of folks don't realize it. You can find out more stuff about a person than they probably didn't really know.
And a lot of that stuff used to always exist. Like when you bought a house, that was part of a public record, or when you bought land or something like that.
And that's all out there, too. You can tell.
It was away in a building in a filing cabinet. And now it's just so much more accessible.
Well, you can go to this one website, and if you want to find out a lot of stuff about a person, I think they charge, maybe $1? And they tell you all the personal information about that person. How many are in the family, the income, and blah, blah, blah.
When did you get married?
Yeah. You know, and how long they've been there, and their kids, and residence, and, you know, everything else.
How much did you pay for your house?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. No, it's all out there. But I think that a lot of that has always been there, but it's just the matter of having access to it. It's so much more accessible now than it's ever been. And when things become accessible, then they become correlated. And that makes life easier for people who want to find things out. And you have to, you know, figure out what their intentions are.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to be judged based on their intentions, unfortunately.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, and those of you who are in the Hangout, do me a favor and mute your microphones. I listened to a couple of the old chats, and the entire, you can't hear the questions or the answers because all you hear are chairs creaking and people clearing their throats and stuff like that.
Dogs
so
barking.
Please. Yeah, right. So
leaf
please.
Blowers, yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Vacuums.
Mute your mics. Cuz I can't hear you anyway. I've got my sound muted because
yeah, here in the studio, we won't be able to hear you.
But I'm trying to run a show. I can't listen to that at the same time.
But if you want to see a guy with a great-looking beard, come and join the Google Hangout, right?
Join the Google Hangout. We're there. You can also just watch it, of course.
Sure.
On YouTube.
Yeah.
At Nick Francesco. So that would be easy enough to do. But it's up there, so do that. And, of course, the forums are up. We've got a lot of controversy about the theme in the forum.
Uh-oh.
Well, I understand it. I just don't have time. There are tens of thousands of themes.
Is this one of those things where no matter what you pick,
everybody's going to hate it? I don't really care. But I agree that this is a nice looking one, but there are elements of it I don't like. And I'm willing to look at others. I'm willing to try others. I just don't have time to personally go through tens of thousands of themes. And I want a theme that is three columns and responsive.
Okay.
So it works well on
a lot of different devices.
A lot of different devices, a lot of different looks and screen sizes. Having three columns means that we can have more things up near the top because I've had several people say, I can't find this, I can't find that. Well, guess what? It's below the fold, so you have to actually scroll.
I see.
To find it. So, but this is a work in progress. We're all working on it. If you have a suggestion for a different theme, then please feel free to join the forums and tell us about it. And yes, if you were joined under the old sound bites, you have to join under the new sound bites, and that gives you the right to do everything. You can go into the forums and do all that stuff. So,
the one thing that I'm liking,
what's that?
I'm not getting all that spam email.
That's right.
I'm getting
some of it. The nice thing about this is there are a couple of spam filter things that work. Plus, we've got the CAPTCHA that lets people that at least tries to make sure you're an actual human. I get about a half a dozen spam messages a day, but it's really just a matter of click
gone. Yeah, I mean, I get a couple hundred just in the morning when I opened up my email.
Yep.
Ouch.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They were all filtering through and. And a lot of them, that's only counting the singles.
Right.
It was always doubled.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I mean.
Right. So you're blowing 10 minutes a morning. just getting rid of all that mail.
Right. Well, I'll have to show you how easy it is to do now.
Oh, yeah. No. Now, before it was I come down, hit my email, then go get my coffee.
Right.
Because usually it's downloading anywhere from, 2,000 to 3,000 emails.
Right.
And that's no exaggeration from overnight and that. So, but now, it's good.
Now you got nothing because they're all staying in the forum. And I'll show you how that works.
Nick,
later.
Have you ever checked out that EFF.org site, the Electronics Frontier Foundation?
I have.
They are really on the front lines of this anti-CISPA movement that you were talking about earlier.
Yep.
And they are a group of people, and I don't want to say activists, but it's sort of like that.
Yeah, they're activists.
That are very interested in keeping the internet open and making sure that different companies don't lock down certain standards. And the government doesn't try and regulate as much as they can. So check out that website, EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Good thought. Very good thought. All right, our first caller is Bodan from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bodan. What's up?
Gentlemen, good afternoon. It's a beautiful, salubrious Saturday, weather-wise.
It is that, isn't it?
Yes. I'm calling with a follow-up to my call from last Saturday in regards to changing antivirus programs, and something occurred to me on Monday with my personal computer that has never occurred to me before. I do have a Hotmail account, sort of a secondary account. It's not my primary account. And on Monday morning, I decided to check my emails before going to work, and all of a sudden, I saw that my name at Hotmail was sending me to another email box an email. And it just had a link. I'm not even sure what the subject line was. I go, this is strange. So what I didn't remember is that weekend, for some reason, I didn't log out of my Hotmail account. And it's the new updated version with the Outlook.
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden, so it must have been open for 3 or 4 days. And all of a sudden, the system or somehow, or maybe I got hacked or something, sent out email to the people in the address book, and there's only maybe a half a dozen of them, but including myself, and all of a sudden I noticed I sent out an email. No, I didn't.
Right.
I ran the tango, and other than tracking cookies, I came up clean. No virus. What do you think?
I think you got hacked at the other end. Change your password.
I did that. I said I did. I changed my password. I have not had a problem. I've been monitoring daily. But one thing I also did was I log out now. So after I check my Hotmail email,
good move.
I then log out. I no longer keep it open.
One of the interesting things that they're finding out about Hotmail is that every once in a while, when you log into Hotmail, you might get somebody else's system. Email, because I don't know why, but if you don't log out, sometimes that happens, and I don't know why, but Hotmail is junk to begin with.
Some
I'm sorry.
Kind of weird session collision.
Yeah, I've had it. I use it like for business thing. If you want to use it, for that thing.
It's got a lot of great features, but just the fact that it is so easily and often, it's a huge target.
Sure. I mean, there's
major.
So many users there.
Yeah. So you don't think it was actually generated from my computer? Somebody probably logged in or something. It wasn't out of my end, was it, do you think?
No, I don't think it was out of your end at all. I would just regularly change my Hotmail password.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, you've given me some insight, because I was a little concerned that my machine was, compromised, but I ran the tango and it came up clean, other than tracking cookies. And I go, I don't think they can do that.
Yeah, no. It's not... It's not you. It's the other end.
Got it. Well, enjoy your day, gentlemen, and I thank you for your advice.
Thank you. Have fun.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, people don't know that changing your password really reduces the window of time that people have to try and guess your password successfully.
Yep.
And, pardon me, that's a great way to keep you more secure.
I cringe when people say, I haven't changed my password in years.
Right.
Yeah, that's not a good idea. Change your password regularly. All right, listen, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Wurstner. I stumbled over Steve Reagan. Me, Nick Francesco, and you. And Mike is here, just kind of hanging out in the background.
There he is.
We're donut deprived. That's
we
why.
Are. Is that's the Mike reason. It's 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Steve from Rochester, New York on the line. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Hi. Great show. Thanks. Have a new iPad, and I'm wondering what's a good virus software for that.
I have fantastic news for you. Because the iPad is so locked down by Apple, and because Apple does such a good job at regulating the type of software that you can put on it, the chances of contracting any type of malware on the iPad itself are very, very slim. And because of that, I don't have to recommend antivirus for iPads or iOS devices in general.
Oh, okay. Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, the protection is built in.
Oh, thank you.
All right, so that was...
However, if you do want antivirus software, there are a couple that are out there.
Okay.
We talked about them last week. Hold on.
Nick is furiously typing.
Yeah. Oh, that's all right. Thank you.
No, hold on. Kaspersky makes one. There are bunches of them. They work on the iPhone as well as on the iPad. Sophos makes one. McAfee, of course, makes one. Don't use that one. Virus Remover, iSafeGuard, Virus Barrier. There's a bunch of them. Most of them are $2.99. iSafeGuard is $2.99. Virus Remover is $2.99. No, iSafeGuard is free. Virus Remover is $2.99. Virus Barrier is $2.99.
I want to learn how all of these work, because when Apple's sandboxing all of their apps on the device, what apps are getting escalated privileges sufficient to cause a malware type problem?
Well, but again, we've seen Apple throw a bunch of apps out of the App Store because they were malicious.
After the fact, right.
And so having something like this, clearly nobody, even Apple's filtering system, is not perfect.
No,
so
I agree.
Having something like that available is never a bad idea. And the iPad is powerful enough that having something like that running in the background isn't really going to take up a lot of your cycles. So it's not a big deal to actually be running it, and it's not a bad idea because things slip through the cracks.
There is a nice article from Forbes.com from a writer named Tim Worstall, Worstall, from June of last year that talks about this, if you want to look it up.
What's a good virus software for the iPad?
Well, the ones I just mentioned, iSafe is one, Kaspersky is one, McAfee makes one, although I don't recommend them. Virus Barrier is another, and you should be able to find all of those in the store.
Oh, thank you very much.
There you go.
Okay.
But I agree that it's a very locked down system, but the reality is that it's always a leapfrog game, and if you can protect your system, it's not a bad idea.
Well, yeah, it's never a bad idea to know what's available and to be ready to execute those if you feel the need.
Right. You know, when it comes to security, I've always been a belt and suspenders kind of guy, so I've always preferred to have more protection than I felt was necessary. It never hurts to have more protection. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is, this may be Sal.
Yes.
Sal from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Sal. What's up?
Hey, that was my question. Was how are they going to get around the sandboxing if it's locked down, and how would an antivirus work if that program can't get out of its own sandbox?
Well, there's two things. First, there have been iOS viruses, so somebody clearly is doing it. And secondly, no sandbox is perfect. They just aren't. Something's got to have a hook into something somewhere. And humans wrote the sandboxing software, so clearly at some point somebody made a mistake somewhere.
It's not about saying that it could never happen. It's about saying that it's just less likely to happen. Especially people who If you are the kind of person who will jailbreak your device so that you can run apps from things that don't come from the App Store, the process of jailbreaking that device, by its very nature,
right,
is hacking that device and looking for flaws in the OS.
You know, but even
that's a different situation. I mean, that's just opening the doors and saying, okay.
But even if you don't
come in, but the doors are open, you know.
Right, but even if you don't jailbreak it, clearly, Apple has dumped a bunch of stuff out of the store any number of times for being malicious. So clearly, even Apple admits that it's possible, and they're being as diligent as they can, but. You know, like I've always said, it's a game of leapfrog. And if you can and if you can help play the game by running antivirus to keep your system safe, why not do it? You know, the iPad is certainly powerful enough that running an antivirus program in the background doesn't slow it down any. So why not? Why not be safer?
Okay.
You know,
I just don't know of any virus that they've had at all on an iPad. I mean...
There have been a couple, and like I said, Apple's dumped some malicious software out of the store. So clearly something's going on.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Yep. That's, you know, I won't get into the technical details of how to break the sandbox, partially because I don't entirely understand it myself, not being an iOS programmer. I mean, I in general know how to break a sandbox. I don't know how to do it specifically on iOS.
A little bit of Googling has found an article that says the first iPad virus was reported in April 2010. It was reported to erase files and damage data. It was not designed to attack the iPad, but it was designed to attack the iPhone. The iPad and iPhone, as you guys know, use the same operating system, and that allows developers to create applications for both devices, but potentially allows criminals to develop malware. They can affect both systems. So if they're, you know, self-executing, self-replicating, that you generally have to have a host in order to spread. Worms are the same way, but they don't self-execute and don't need a host file. The Trojan horses look like legitimate software, and when you download them, they do something else, and they can trick you into downloading them. And like we've been talking about, there are utilities available, and some people, you know, the jury's out on whether they're truly, truly necessary. But if you keep your iPad's iOS software up to date through iTunes, that's a great way to help yourself stay protected.
Right. Yeah, but I'm not saying, you know, it depends. If there are cult people out there, of course, in everything. But, you know, when I say to some people you have to make sure that your iPad is protected, they get insulted because, you know, Apple makes everything perfect. Well, they don't, because they are human. And so they will make mistakes just like everybody else. That's why there are updates, because they fix their mistakes. And that's why there are updates, because when they find them, I'll guarantee you the bad guys are trying to find them as well. So why not help them out and just run some antivirus software? Keep your machine that much safer. It's silly not to, frankly. I mean, if the iPad were an underpowered device, then I would say don't run your antivirus software because you can't use the system when you do. But the iPad is a powerful enough device, just like iPhones are, that you're not even going to notice you're running it. So where's the big deal?
I'm going to have to, during the break, go get some on my iPad and check it out.
Yeah.
To see what it does.
Like I said, there's the one that's free that I mentioned, and there are others that you can pay for, I, of course, always recommend if you get software, pay for it, even if it has a free version, because it just encourages people to make more good software. So when you find something that you like, that you want to keep, then I would do that. But
don't be a sponge.
Don't be a sponge. It's exactly right. All right, I'm going to read the next news item while we wait for you to give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Hewlett-Packard on Friday started shipping its $169.99 Slate 7 tablet with Android 4.1, which signals the company's re-entry into the consumer tablet market after the touchpad imploded in 2011. The tablet became available first in the U.S. through its website. The tablet is also available for order on the company's U.K. website, and it's scheduled to ship on May 1. The Slate 7 weighs 13 ounces, offers 5 hours of video battery life on video playback, and is the company's first tablet with the Android OS. The 7-inch screen displays images at a resolution of 1024 by 600 pixels. The tablet has 8 gig of internal storage, but has a micro SD slot for expandable storage. It has a dual-core ARM Cortex A9 processor running at 1.4 gigahertz. Key features include a 3-megapixel back camera, a VGA front camera, and Wi-Fi. Other features include Beats Audio, which is also found on HP's laptops and desktops. HP hopes buyers will choose its aggressively priced tablet over other Android tablets like Google's Nexus, Samsung's Galaxy Tab, and Amazon's Kindle Fire HD, which are priced at $199. But HP's well-entrenched rivals offer a suite of services and content, including music and movies, along with the tablet. HP is relying on Google for delivery of music, movies, and TV shows to its tablets, but has said it could offer its own cloud service when the time is right. Slate 7 is HP's first consumer tablet offered since the 2001 debacle of the WebOS-based touchpad tablet, which was nixed after HP that year announced that it would either sell or spin off its personal systems group, which dealt in PCs and tablets. In a fire sale, HP sold off its remaining touchpad tablets at prices starting at $99. People lined up outside of stores to buy it.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yep. HP ultimately retained the personal systems group, sold off the WebOS assets to LG in February of this year. Analysts have said that the tablet's price, specifications, and HP brand name are attractive. HP has said it is experimenting with different screen sizes and has said more consumer tablets would be released this year. HP also offers business tablets like the ElitePad 900 based on Windows 8. The $649 Envy X2 with Windows 8 is a hybrid that can be used as a tablet or a laptop. So, does a $170 Android tablet entice you? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Nick, what tablet are you using these days?
I have the Nexus 7.
Okay.
Which I am deeply, deeply in lust with.
I see.
Still to this day.
Same with me, and I've got the upgraded version, the 32 gig.
So
and
I love it.
What are you guys using them for?
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything. Okay, what are you not using them for?
I use it as an ebook reader.
Yeah.
I use it as a calendar. I use it as a note-taking device. Everywhere I go, everything I do is on that
and
tablet.
I can get to my Google Drive, so if I want to look at pictures or anything else, documents or anything else, I can get to the Google Drive. Like Nick said, I take it to work. And I love to just sit there and read during my lunch hour or that. But I can check my mail. I can send mail. I put a lot of my music that I like listening to right now, and I can put it up there because the Nexus 7 has, through Google, the music store and their own music thing that I can upload my particular music that I've purchased that's not in iTunes up to there and create my own playlist.
I have a massive number of songs up in the Google store. I also have Pandora.
Okay.
Which I listen to almost exclusively, actually. And the only time that I go to a different device is I often bring my Chromebook to meetings because when I'm taking notes, I like a real keyboard.
Right. Yeah. No, I can get on board with that. The on-screen keyboards are great if you only need to tap out a sentence or two.
Right. But I do Twitter, I do Facebook, what little I do Facebook. I certainly do Google Plus through it. I do all of that stuff through it. If I'm going to talk to my daughter on Skype or on Google Hangout, I do it on that. I mean, I do everything on that.
Well,
that isn't sitting in a meeting actually taking notes.
Right.
But that Nexus, you know, it's just so small. It's portable. And like I say, you can go anywhere. It's with it. Tie into the internet. I mean, there's not, even at work, we've got the free internet access because nowadays you see folks walking around all the time.
Yeah, where don't you have internet access?
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, Google Chrome, the Chromebook, as well as Google Chrome itself, has a new feature. Well, actually, Drive, Google Drive has a new feature.
Okay.
Offline. if you set up offline, it will mirror all of your Google documents on your hard drive.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So now when I take my Chromebook somewhere, if I don't have Wi-Fi, I can still take all the notes, do all the whatever I want to do, and the minute I hook it up to Wi-Fi again, it auto syncs up. So I now am even more in love with my Chromebook because that's now completely automagic.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's pretty interesting.
I really love that. I actually saw that on the thing and read about it last week, and I couldn't get to make it happen fast enough. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. Back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Apple is clearly not Steve Jobs' company anymore, analysts said this week, citing examples from Tuesday's earnings call with Wall Street. 18 months after the co-founder and former CEO's death, Apple is a very different company, the experts argued, driven by current CEO Tim Cook to make moves Jobs would have dismissed out of hand and making mistakes that Jobs would not have tolerated. I just don't think Apple is running quite as well as in Jobs' days, said Ezra Gottheil, analyst with Technology Business Research. Mistakes have been made, like the poor performance of newer OSs on older hardware, Maps, the miss on the iMac, the neglect of the professional market. Cook, in fact, regretted the decision to launch the iMac, the firm's hallmark all-in-one desktop, last October, even though Apple had no hardware to ship. If we could run it over, frankly, I would have announced the iMac after the turn of the year because we felt our customers had to wait too long for that specific product, Cook said during the earnings call Tuesday. Apple unveiled a slightly thinner iMac last October, but didn't begin selling the desktop until 5 weeks later, and then only the smaller of the two units. The larger 27-inch iMac finally started selling in mid-December, 7 weeks after its introduction. Both were in short supply until deep into the quarter ending March 30th. During the bulk of those 5 months, Apple had few, if any, iMacs to sell, as it had pulled the previous models from its e-store and not restocked the brick-and-mortar outlets. The lack of iMacs was a prime reason why Apple's fourth quarter 2012 Mac sales dropped 22%, and the shortages also contributed to the 2% downturn in 2013's first quarter. Is this a formula for disaster, said Gottheil? No. Apple will find its rhythm again. It will be a less spectacular company, but still a solid one. Other analysts saw the Cook era differently, but like Gottheil, used the latest quarter's financials and Apple's executives explanation of the results to make their points. So, has Apple seen its last best days? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Yeah. So has Apple seen its last best days?
Again?
Spoiler, no.
Every time somebody asks me about Apple for the last 20 years, it's always been, hey, are they doing okay? And it's not always been yes. You know, in the mid-90s, man, it was rough. Stock price was down to $12 and change. Well, it was just up over $700.
They're a company in the real world. They have their ups and downs.
Yep.
It's not, they went down 2%. Yeah, that's not doom.
Now,
down 2%.
That's a fact of life.
These are analysts, and you have to figure out how do analysts make money or how do they make a name for themselves? They have to say something that sounds a little bit outrageous.
They don't get their name in the paper if all they say
they went down
2%, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, the other thing, we were talking to Steve just a few weeks ago saying how it's funny, going back in time, we're kind of reminiscing from the old website to this and talking about the days when, Steve would have a list. All right, next week it's been announced this new Mac is coming out and this one and this one and this one.
They were hitting every other month or so with
some
and product.
There was always something else, and he was bringing in different, the Cube and all these other different new Macs that were coming out. And then once the iPads and the iPhones and all that came out, down, gone.
Right, well, and there are those who say that Apple no longer innovates because they haven't had a whole bunch of new products. And that's part of the problem. For years, it was 50 new products a year.
Right.
Now yeah. It isn't. Is that because Jobs was the only person who came up with new products? No.
No. He was the guy at the top of the pyramid there. He was the guy who got to pull the cover off of it on stage and say, ta-da.
Right.
But I don't think he was, you know, soldering anything or engineering anything.
Right.
Now, what's new iPhone 5, is it, that's coming out?
No, that's been out.
Is it?
Yeah, 5 is out. Well, I lost track because I stick to the Android. You know,
Uh-huh. Yeah, iPhone 5 came out, I believe, in end of September.
Well, what's the new one that they keep?
Well, there's iPad Mini that came out in October.
Yeah. I thought there was a newer iPhone coming out yet.
No. Well, there's always a new one coming out.
But... talk. Yeah. Right?
Okay, that's probably
there's
what
there's talk about the next rumors. One being... having a different kind of glass and a different stuff on the back. But again, there are analysts now who are saying, who cares? It's still just an iPhone.
Right. That's not good enough.
And that's not good enough.
Right.
Well, and the problem
you gotta
is
woo-na.
Because for so many years they wowed and wowed and wowed and wowed and wowed.
Right.
The stuff that they're doing now, which for any other company, people would say, holy crap, that's amazing. For Apple, they're saying, yeah, so?
No big deal.
Well, and by the way, they're also shipping and selling 7 of these per second, day and night, all week long, for an entire quarter.
Yep.
That not only are they doing really impressive stuff, but they are doing it at scales that are just mind-boggling.
The problem is they're not being judged against the industry.
Yes.
They're being judged against people's perceived remembrance of what the company used to be.
Right.
Which is not real, but it doesn't matter. That's still what they're being judged against.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's true.
Like, I don't know. I get it. Everybody wants magic. But some days you don't get magic, you just get good stuff.
Yeah, you know? What have you done for me lately?
Right.
And of course, Apple's not doing themselves any favors when they release an iPad and every other word say about how it's magical and wonderful.
Right. And that's the other problem.
Words that don't mean anything to describe a physical product that you can tangibly hold in your hands.
Right. Right.
So they're kind of, I don't know, reaping what they sow to a certain extent.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. And they don't have the reality distortion field that was Steve Jobs around anymore.
Yeah. No, it kind of went with him.
Right. And so now they're just the company. And
that's boring.
And it's normal.
But HR departments.
Apple was never normal.
And custodians that sweep the halls. And it's like, well, it's not the Oompa Loompas anymore, you know?
Right, exactly.
Well, the other thing that we were talking about, because, you know, we're talking the difference between PC and Mac before, you'd always sit there and say, well, you got to find your audience and who's going to be your support person.
Right.
Now you get into tablets. Right. Tablets, all said, now it's a level playing field. Whether you go to the iTunes store or whether you go to the Android store, it's just working apps. Apps are apps.
Right.
And whether you're playing with them. So you don't have to know the underlying operating system of the Mac nor the Android, which before, if you were a PC or a Mac user, you had to learn how the file structure and everything else and how things work. Now, it's more or less a level playing field, and what you can do on one, you can do on the other. It's not much different.
Right. Partially because there's less you can do behind the scenes.
Right.
It's easier to learn what you can do behind the scenes.
That's right.
And pretty much it's semi-identical. The difference is in names. You know, you go into settings.
Yeah, we need a Rosetta Stone.
Right.
to learn them.
Years and years ago, when they first started, when they first brought out the Mac, we went to training and learned the programming for the Mac.
Uh-huh.
Then Microsoft brought out Windows, and we went to training for Windows. And a friend of mine and I sat there, and every single function that they talked about, we said, oh, that's this function on the Mac, only they reversed.
Right. You got to make two columns on a sheet of paper.
Right. And that's what we did. That is exactly what we did. Because we've been programming Macs for so long, when Windows came out, it was really literally just a matter of, oh, this function. Okay.
Yeah.
And here's the way the parameters work.
And they have to give it a different name.
Right.
And here's the other thing. Like I said, I'm not a big Mac person, but my girlfriend happened to get the small mini tablet by the iPad. And me not being even a Mac person, I was able to sit there, set it up for her, got connected to her wireless. I wound up putting her pictures up there. We wound up getting all her favorite apps down on it, set it up, set her email up so she can go get her Gmail account and check things there. We set up the calendar. And again, I didn't have to know a lot about the Mac. I just knew that I had to pull down certain apps, going to the iTunes store, searching for it, putting them on there for her. And she's good to go. She can check her email. She can surf the web. She can write documents, do everything that she wants to do.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's just there. And again, you don't have to be a big expert. Steve showed me how to, which once I checked it, as far as the syncing of the calendars and all that, it's great. She loves it because she can even see a lot of the stuff that she just puts on Google Calendar, and it's there, right, even on the Mac, because it syncs.
Yep. And it's just and the nice thing about it is on both platforms, upgrades are automatic in the background for most apps.
Don't need to know anything.
They'll tell you, oh, this has changed. You
right,
know,
this is ready.
Right. But you don't have to worry about it. Upgrading the operating system is ridiculously simple too. So we're kind of getting past the days when you had to be a real guru to understand this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We still have people who are laptop or desktop centric.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if you're doing a lot of Photoshop or you're doing a lot of audio or video editing, clearly you don't have enough power no matter how much desktop you've got. I get that.
Tablets are essentially a casual device.
Right.
And most of the needs that most of the people have are casual needs.
Right.
And they fit very, very well.
And so for some people, something like a Chromebook could be their primary device. For some, it would be their secondary device. But for many people, a tablet is good enough to be their secondary device or even their primary device. If you do a lot of consuming and very little creating, then a tablet is a consumer's device.
Yep.
Not a creator's device. And that's true no matter what your tablet is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Cross-platform.
Right. If you do, like I keep saying, I use my Chromebook for 90% of my creation.
Because it's got that keyboard, you said.
Because it's got that keyboard, and that's and I write. And so I can use it for that. Now, do I have a giant monitor at work, which is much easier to do some stuff on? Yes.
That around with you?
Yeah, oddly, I do not. I have a nice sized monitor at home that it's easier to do some things on. Yes, absolutely. And when the cat is sitting on my chest and forcing me to lean as far back in my chair as I can, I like having a bigger screen than the 13 and a half inch Chromebook. But for when I'm out and about, I get 8 hours of battery life out of that, and I'm perfectly happy. But if I'm not going to be creating,
right,
I'll just take my tablet, and it's perfectly good. I mean, I'm creating little things, tweets and things like that, maybe answering some emails, but I'm not writing. I'm not sitting and writing.
Yeah, long form.
Right.
Now, so, what about your articles for the paper? You do those on your Chromebook?
I have.
Okay.
I often have. Like I said, if I'm sitting at home at night, I'm the big machine is right there.
Right.
I mean, yeah, you know, obviously. But if I'm out and about, you know, for example, last week, I was out and about. I had my Chromebook with me, and I suddenly realized it's due today.
You had that moment where you stand straight up. You just uh-oh.
So I went into my email, picked out questions.
Right.
Wrote it up that way, mailed it to the DNC, and I was done. Easy enough to do. And I can do everything I need or want to do on that. Now, similarly, I could have done that on a tablet, but I don't like to write long form on that keyboard.
Right. If you've got a tablet, the number one thing I can recommend, if you do any amount of writing longer than a couple of sentences, get yourself a nice wireless keyboard. Apple makes one, but there are lots of other companies, Targus, and go to your local office supply store, go to your local computer shop and investigate what they have. They're not terribly expensive. They run on a couple of batteries, and they use Bluetooth to talk to your tablet, and that allows you to get the real keyboard feel for your fingers and not be tapping on pictures of keys on your screen instead.
Right.
much, much better, more efficient way to do a lot of writing.
Right.
Very convenient. And a lot of them have extra buttons that can trigger extra features, like automatically taking back to the home screen, or muting, or doing volume, or turning on other features that you might find interesting or useful. And they're really not that expensive. I think they're on the order of $50 or yep. less. They're a little bit more for the Apple
Depends.
One,
depends on which mm-hmm. and what you're yep. getting. But yeah,
that's a great one to do.
Yeah, and I actually have one. I have a Logitech. But I just don't carry it. I mean, it's not something, if I grab my tablet, I don't also right. think, ooh, just in case.
And that's kind of interesting because Microsoft is trying to do a device that's kind of in between the two. And we should probably talk about that a little bit more when we come back.
Yeah, we will. We will. But we are going to take a slightly longer break. You've managed to, those of you who did stay awake through an entire hour of the show. We'll be doing it again. On the other side of the interesting stuff that's coming up right now. So we'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. We will be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, Mike, and I don't even know your last name, and you. Stay tuned, and a whole nother hour of Sound Bites is coming up. Longest running computer show in the known universe, right here on the truly great member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Sound Bites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we hurtle headlong into the second hour of this week's Sound Bites.
Feel the G's.
Feel the G's. And you had you were talking about the melding of laptops and desktops and tablets.
Yeah, Microsoft
and how in the Surface.
Yeah, right. So Microsoft's got this product that they've been trying to sell a lot of called the Surface. Comes in a couple of different flavors. You can learn more about it at their website, of course, at Microsoft.com/Surface. They have a cover that when you flip it open doubles as a keyboard.
Yep.
And the tablet has like a little kickstand that comes out the back, so you can set it in what we call landscape orientation, so it's longer side to side. And then you flip down the cover, and it's got a keyboard on the inside. And they have a couple of different ones. They have a touch-based cover. And they have one that actually has keys that have actual what we call travel. So they, when you press them, they kind of squish downward. Not much, but a little bit. And the thing that I was the most surprised to find out is there's an actual trackpad at the bottom of the keyboard that you can slide your finger over.
Yep.
And it behaves just the same as you'd expect.
I will say this. That hardware, I'm not talking about the software, that hardware is amazing.
It's very clever.
It really is. I mean, and the fact that you can click the keyboard in or click it back out again, and it just, the whole concept, and I don't like the way they connect the pen.
Okay.
It's a little loose.
I didn't play with that very much.
Yeah, but the rest of it, holy moly, the hardware is really innovative and really nice. It's, the machine is ridiculously light to begin with. And the keyboard is real light, and it's nice. It's got a kickstand. It's got everything. The software, I have some issues with, but they're going to fix those in 8.1.
And when's that due? That's due pretty soon, isn't it?
It's due pretty soon. They're going to bring back the start menu. The problem with 8.0 is the fact that you actually have two versions of a lot of things. So, for example, Internet Explorer. The version that you get to from the Metro interface, the start menu there.
The one with all the squares on it.
With all
tiles.
The squares on it, is actually different from the one if you go to the desktop.
Mm-hmm.
So if you, for example, save a bookmark or whatever, or a cookie, it's not in the other one. And people are very confused. There's a massive number of support calls.
Where dissension people, in the troops.
Yep. And there's four or five apps that are exactly the same way. The what's in the Metro interface is actually a separate and often pared down version of what you get at the desktop. No idea why they did that. It's a fairly boneheaded move, frankly.
Well, like I said, when it first came out, they had which they're doing now by giving you the option to either have the Metro look or your basic start button.
Yep.
Hello, you've inbred this into people for too many years.
You can still get to the desktop, but it's not.
It's not intuitive.
Not the same way. And there's a lot of amazing stuff you can do from the Metro interface with the sweeping left and right and up and down and wherever. The problem is it's all hidden knowledge.
Yes, right.
There's no tutorial.
There is a tutorial.
But nobody pays attention to it.
it's not discoverable.
Right. And it's only if you and what's really needed are people.
We need
who,
Clippy. Can Clippy come back? It looks like you're trying
to slap you too. I'm going to slap him earlier. I'm going to slap you.
It looks like you're trying to do a four-finger swipe.
Yeah. But it's there are some very nice features to it, and you know me, I'm not a Microsoft apologist under any circumstance. This is a nice product.
I agree.
Terms of the hardware, it's the best tablet hardware I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah.
The software does not. The problem is they're entrenched in Windows. You know, they're shoehorning Windows into this hardware, and I don't think it serves Microsoft or their customers well. But that's a separate issue. The hardware is unbelievably good.
Right. Yeah. So those Surface Pros that run the full version of Windows 8, those start at $899.
Right. So that's a real laptop. I mean, that's
well, yeah. It's a real laptop with sort of a semi compromised keyboard. Probably still perfectly usable, but just different than what a traditional laptop keyboard would feel like. But it's a nice looking device. Then they've also got what I call kind of their junior devices, and those run the Windows RT OS, and that's kind of the OS that's designed to run on less powerful hardware that might get slightly better battery life, but just doesn't have quite the CPU that the other devices have.
Right, and again, that's designed for people who really do want a tablet.
Right, yeah.
You know, who aren't creators, they're consumers.
Yes, and those are less expensive.
Right.
So it's nice that they've got two different versions. You can make that choice. You can decide for yourself. And as long as Microsoft can keep, you know, all the different juggling balls in the air and support everything properly, then
and there
the
lies
only person
the challenge.
That wins is the person that wins is the customer at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. It's and that's the big thing. You know what? I am an Android guy, but I don't care which one you buy, because by having all of them available, they're in a race, and I win.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, as long as Microsoft can deliver adequate support for the thing that you like the most, and they don't decide to run away from one device and towards another.
See, that's
for business reasons.
That's their track. They have a poor track record. You know, they bring out stuff, and it's there for a while, and then, we're discontinuing this.
Yeah.
So
and
all
it's
the
not
loyalists,
just them,
that,
right?
You know, but a majority. I mean, I've seen more stuff through Microsoft that they came out, you know, and oh, we're doing this, and then they abandon it.
Yep. I completely agree, and it's a problem.
Yeah, because they got a bad track record there, and they've got a lot to overcome.
They usually say the second or third generation is when Microsoft tends to get things right.
Right.
And I tend to agree with them. It usually takes them a time or two to work out what
they wanted to do in the first place.
They lose,
and then they own the market.
Well, like I say, money. Say, Microsoft Money. Remember that program that was going to replace
what we used to use before Quicken?
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, and I mean, that was
the Microsoft Encyclopedia.
Yes, sure. And there's another
one. I used Microsoft Access when it was their telecommunications system, their modem software.
Yeah. I mean, here's some good products, but it didn't catch on. All right. So all the folks that took the time to say, going back to this money program,
right,
setting everything up and trying to export it to get to another one, forget that. That wasn't happening. Why would you want to switch?
Right.
So they'd read in QuickBooks files and all that.
Oh, right.
But
sure,
you couldn't get it out. So if you get everything set up in this Microsoft money, and like you say, get into it for a little while, and now say, well, we're discontinuing it. Sorry, wasn't that much interest. Now you're hosed, because now you got to turn around and go buy Quicken and set it up.
Yep.
And use it.
That's one of the reasons that I like open source software.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if somebody abandons it, there's a community of people who pick it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Open source is a bunch of programmers that walk around and say, oh, yeah? Yeah, well, we're going to end of life that product. And they say, oh, yeah?
Right.
Then they'll build a converter so that you can move it wherever you want.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They just are not interested in being told what to do.
Right. Well, like I say, most of them, and it's a two-way street. You can take, say QuickBooks. You can export stuff in that to then be pulled into other programs.
Right.
Whereas Microsoft, no, it's a one-way street. Yeah, into theirs and forget about sending
it
out.
The Roach Motel model. Everything comes in and nothing gets out.
Yep, exactly. Yep. One-way street.
Speaking of two-way streets, I talked about this earlier, but I actually have a news item
about
it.
Good segue.
Thank you.
Nice.
Google Drive users no longer have to worry about accessing their documents without an internet connection, as long as they're using Google's Chrome browser.
Right.
Chrome now supports automatic offline syncing for Google Drive, allowing you to read and edit any document, spreadsheet, or presentation. Actually, spreadsheets, I'm not sure, are available just yet. Even when the internet is down. To use this feature, you must have Drive's Chrome web app installed, and you must enable offline access in the dialog box that appears. Chrome previously allowed offline editing for individual documents, but that meant you had to plan ahead and choose which files to sync. Now the Drive app for Chrome syncs all files automatically. So you now can work while offline in Google Drive if you use the Chrome browser. If you edit a document while offline, those changes will appear in the online version once the internet connection is restored. Just a word of caution, if you edit a document offline on one computer while someone else edits the online version, Drive will combine the text from both documents once you're back online. You don't lose any text, but you may have to edit down the combined work.
Uh-huh.
So if you're collaborating...
I was wondering how they were going to solve that.
Yeah, it's just here it is, you figure it out.
Right.
But that's rare. It's generally you with one document, or if you're collaborating, you're both online.
Right.
And doing it live.
And if you haven't done that taking a word processing document and going online with a couple of people, what happens is it shows your document on your screen, your co-editor sees it on their screen too, and you see your cursor where you're typing, and then you see this other cursor that's floating around the screen, and then they can start typing too. So it's everybody's working together. Or
it's a little weird the first half a dozen times you see it.
But then it seems so powerful.
And it really is, because you can go up and help and talk to them. And, of course, if you're chatting back and forth simultaneously,
right,
it really is like you're collaborating in the same room.
We used to use it for taking notes at meetings.
Yep.
We didn't have to have a secretary in there, because we would all do this. And somebody would just put out all of the thoughts kind of as they came into the meeting. And other people would flow through it afterwards and follow up and arrange things and configure things and make sure that all the timestamps were in place. And it was fantastic.
Yep.
So give that a try.
Google also warns users not to enable offline editing on public or shared computers, because anyone can access those data if they know where to go look.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But auto-sync should also help deflect some of the system of Chrome, some of the criticism of Chromebooks. Because detractors claim Chromebooks are worthless without an internet connection. That's not really true.
No, especially if you can store stuff offline, then you're just limited by how much storage space that your Chromebook has.
Right. Google says offline syncing may take a few days to roll out. To see if it's working for you, click on the More tab on the left side of the screen in Google Drive. Should drop down a bunch of stuff. And then if you see offline, click on that. You should see all of your documents listed along with a message about being able to visit drive.google.com in your browser for complete access even when you're system is offline.
I'm going to check this out while you're taking that.
Yep. So, does full offline access make you more likely to look at a Chromebook? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Just like Roger did from Greece, New York. Welcome, Roger. What's your question?
Thank you. We need a new virus program for my wife's laptop. And I went to Consumer Reports to look at their ratings, and I look at the ratings at some of the recommended or top-rated programs, and when I go to the user reviews, I see some sort of puzzling range of reviews or experience. Some of them say these programs slow down their computer terribly. So I thought I'd check with you folks and see what you're suggesting these days.
Well, we suggest the stuff that's in the Security Tango at securitytango.com. There's a bunch of stuff in there. Here's the deal about reviews. People are people, and they will mostly put in a review when they're porky about something.
Either direction.
Right, right. And so what you get also are people who are not at all tech savvy. So, for example, it slows down my system. Well, if you're doing a full system scan, absolutely it will slow down your system. If you have an old machine with very little RAM and a slow processor, absolutely it will slow down your system. But if you're one of those people with a new machine, quad-core processor, 8 gigs of RAM, yada, you're not even going to notice it's running.
Okay.
Except when you're doing a full system scan.
All right.
So, yes, obviously anything that's using actual cycles will slow your system down. The question is, does it slow it down noticeably? So if your system is fast enough, no, it won't.
Okie doke.
Yeah, right.
All right. When I boot up my computer into Firefox, I get this last week, I get a little window saying a program needs your permission to continue. Jucheck.exe from Oracle America. Are you aware of that? Is that okay? It looks like it's Java.
Yeah. There is a program called JUCheck. Is that what you're saying?
JUCheck, yes.
Yeah, there is a JUCheck.exe it's the Java updater.
Okay.
And what it does is it checks to see if there is an update to Java.
And it has to phone home to go find out what the newest version is and compare that against what you have.
Exactly. And however, there is also a Trojan horse called JUCheck.exe. So the question becomes, which one do you have? And the way you find that out is to run a thorough scan of your system, dance the security tango, don't skip any steps, blah, 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 blah. And that will tell you whether or not you've got the clean version or you've got the dirty version, and it'll clean it out for you.
Okay. Now, last week I tried doing the Security Tango, and the first step was to go into Internet Explorer. And when
Roger, hold on. We have to take a break. Don't hang up. I'll come back to you in just a couple of minutes here on Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we still have Roger on the line. Roger, what was your next question?
Earlier this week, my wife went into her Gmail account, and a window popped up that said, you have to sign up for this thing, and I don't remember just what it was, and there was no way we could get rid of it. It seemed to sort of say that it related to Gmail, but we tried, you know, closing it out, and at that point I decided, you know, something was awry, and I needed to run the Security Tango. and opened another window with Internet Explorer, but I got down to the first step of in the security tango there of removing temporary Internet files.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not find the tab at the top that you referred to. Does that make any sense?
The tab at the top of what?
In Internet Explorer, the tools menu, you click on Internet options, and then delete files. Somewhere in there, I just could not find it, and I tried several times. What was interesting was after I tried that, I finally just gave up on that. We shut Google down, or Gmail down, and then later we came back in, and everything seemed to be fine in Gmail. Now, do you think we still have a problem there? Or?
Well, here's the thing. If you the big difference is if you mostly use what do you mostly use Internet Explorer?
No, I think she uses Firefox.
Okay. So you on her machine, you should have followed the Firefox thing. But yes, for Internet Explorer, for Firefox, for all of those, there is a tools menu. The problem is many systems, the menus are not visible. And I have to go in and edit the instructions to tell you how to make the menus visible, because a lot of people turn them off, or they've come turned off now for some reason. Automatically, they're turned off. So I'm going to have to fix that. But basically, it's if you ran the rest of the tango and it cleaned out your system, then you're lucky. The problem was not in your temporary files. So it is perfectly possible to clean your system without killing all your temporary files.
Well, I did not. At that point, I stopped because I thought I had to do that. So that when I came back into Gmail later, I had not done any cleaning of the system.
I would still dance the tango then.
Okay.
It can't hurt. It may not come up every time, so that you don't get terribly annoyed and fix it.
Uh-huh.
But I would definitely dance the tango. Any time you get some wackadoo thing like that suddenly happens, my suggestion is dance the tango.
Okay.
You know, if it's clearly not coming from a website, I mean, if you're a Gmail, why would you see that thing? So it's clearly not coming from the website. It's coming from your computer. So do a dance the tango. But often you'll go to a website and some weird thing will come up. That's probably on that website. You don't have to worry about it.
Well, it looked sort of reminiscent of a virus hoax that I got a couple years back.
Right.
And, I had to go in and remove it. And so that's why I was wondering whether that might be what we're looking at here.
It probably is. So my suggestion is dance the tango. Can't hurt.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. I say it can't hurt. The reality is it takes a little time. But that's just the way life is. We have the tango is not fast because people have big hard drives now.
Right.
And so there are an awful lot of files on those hard drives. You don't think about it, but there's literally thousands and thousands of files that Microsoft or Apple or Linux put on your system that are part of the operating system itself. And so if you do a full system scan, there's a lot of stuff going on back there.
Right. And the only real way to speed that up is to get a faster drive, something like what we call an SSD, a solid state drive that can move information around so much vastly more quickly.
Yep. All right. Our next caller is Ray. Ray.
Howdy.
from Webster. Welcome, Ray. What's up?
Well, I'm sitting in front of my wife's PC. She is running XP Home Edition version 2002 with Service Pro 3. For a week now, she hasn't been able to get online. And what happens is it starts to connect, the progress bar goes about halfway and stops. So I open her Kaspersky Antivirus 6.0, and it states databases are obsolete. And but then just below that, it says update running 100%. So I don't know where the heck to go to try and figure out why she can't connect.
Why did you assume it was Kaspersky?
Well, I didn't. I just, you know, I opened that because I thought that, well, she has a virus. Let me just check that. And she's got all zeros under the, you know, checks that it has. But it just says threat level critical. And I clicked on that where it says fix, and it says the databases that the application uses to protect your computer are obsolete.
Right.
You are advised to update the application.
Right.
Then it says the update is running 100%.
Right. And those are not mutually exclusive, and here's why. What it's saying is that, yes, your database is obsolete, but with what it has, it's running fine. But you should update so it runs with the newest stuff. So it's what it's saying
how
is...
How does this dummy do that?
did you pay for Kaspersky, or is this
yes.
a free version? All right. Do you need to repay? Is your year
no,
up?
No, it's in effect for some time now.
All right. Then somewhere in... Yep. Is somewhere in Kaspersky is an update button.
Uh-huh.
And let me look that up.
So checking that out.
Yeah, we're checking that out.
Steve's furiously. Not Steve.
Do Nick's you have the Internet Security 2013 suite or?
Oh, I.
It depends on which version you have, actually.
All it tells me is antivirus 6.0.
Okay, so if you just have, they actually.
Oh, here's update.
There you go. They actually had an update yesterday.
There's a progress bar running right now after I clicked on it.
There you go. So it should update just fine in terms of that. Now, the other problem, which is your wife's inability to connect to the Internet. Are you on dial-up?
No, we have, I have a senior moment going here. Of course,
I've been there, done that.
Well, I am a considerable senior, so that's...
Right.
That's part of a everyday run in my life.
Right. But you're on some sort of broadband.
Yeah, we have, you know, high-speed internet.
Right. So with that, it should be on all the time. Now, what program did you get that error message in?
Explorer.
All right. Did you try any other program?
Bing, same thing with Bing.
All right, but Bing is actually also in Internet Explorer, right?
Yes.
So what I meant was something else like Firefox or an email program if you have a separate one that you don't get through your browser.
No, we just, you know, whatever this XP
right.
Gave us, that's what we have.
So you haven't, now you can still get online, but your wife can't.
I can get online with both my Macs, yeah.
Okay. You've got a couple of possibilities here. Does she leave her machine on all the time?
Yes.
Restart it. And it's possible.
We've done that.
Okay. Then the other thing to do is check to make sure that the cable is still good. Are you on cable? Are you connected via a hardwire,
yeah.
Okay. Make sure that's tight at both ends. And make
okay.
sure that it hasn't been clipped in any way. Like, for example,
or
if you have a pat or you put a chair down on it or, you know, of that sort of thing.
Everything is, you know, against the wall here, so...
Well, that's not necessarily a good thing.
Through.
If it's gone too far back against the wall, that can actually pinch the cable as well.
Well, it's about 2.5 inches between the desk and the wall.
Make sure that it's tight at both ends.
Okay.
Unplug it and plug it back in again and listen for that click.
Okay.
Right. And then just to be on the safe side, unplug it, wait about 10 seconds, plug it back in, restart your system.
Yep.
If that doesn't do it, then yes, you're probably going to need to dance the security tango. And the easiest way to do that, of course, is to download all of the software onto a thumb drive, put it on her machine from one of your Macs, then move it over to her machine and run it there. I hate to be the one to tell, but wait a minute, you just said that her system is updating.
Yes, it's still updating. At least the progress bar is still there.
Is the progress bar moving?
Well, now it's stopped moving.
But from the time you started until now, it has moved, correct?
It moved to fill the box, but evidently there's a red button that I can click to stop update, so
don't
I haven't
that.
Done that.
Don't do that.
So I'm
but it actually
it's
moved.
Still running.
So I'm wondering if the update actually finishes, then you are indeed connected to the internet, and the problem is now Internet Explorer.
Okay. And if the problem is Internet Explorer,
then it may be a virus.
Okay.
So I would. I'm sorry that it all comes back to that. I get it. But you may luck out. It may be a fairly simple virus. Once Kaspersky is updated, run it. Do a full scan of your system and see if that does it, and then you don't have to dance the full tango. But I would start there.
Okay, gents, I appreciate that. May I suggest that you give your phone number more often? Because
sure. I will indeed.
Three times I was doing something else, and I missed a part of it.
I had to wait. You're absolutely
right.
I also need to put it back on the website, and I apologize for that.
Yeah, I couldn't find it there.
Yep.
But, hey, you guys are now must be aging, because I remember when you started this program 1,000 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm a fairly regular listener. There have been moments of lapses, but you really...
CRS.
You provide not only great entertainment, but a damn good service, and I honor you for that.
Thank you. That's what we love to hear. Yeah. Thank you so very much.
Very nice.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Yeah, one of the problems we continue to have with the security tango is that it can be tedious. We were just talking about that.
That's right.
And I get that, and there is no cure for that. There's no magic to doing a deep scan of your hard drive to keep things clean. It just you got to do what you got to do and get over it. Make yourself a cup of coffee or have an adult beverage and watch the little indicators go by. We're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And just to make Ray happy, I've put the phone numbers on the website.
Oh, good.
So you can give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Just like Tom did from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's up?
Hi. Well, you know, I'm an old Thunderbird user, you know?
Yeah, me too.
And
I am both old and a Thunderbird user.
Yeah. And I got all my addresses in there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And my calendar and all that. And now I've always been on Frontier, Frontier email
right.
with it, you know? And then at one time they changed it so you had to put your ID in the outgoing mail thing, security-wise. But now, suddenly, about 3 weeks ago, it stopped going, automatically going out, any mail going out. No mail going out. And it won't go out. Of course, I'm more on the cloud with my email stuff than the Thunderbird, but that's where my address book is, my master, like, you know. And I called, you know, Frontier, and he checks it, but he's using the web-based system. And he's, oh, there's no problem with it going out. I'm saying, did you make a change to your outgoing SMTP server, you know, or something? And he said, you know, but he didn't address that issue. And I have, nothing's changed with it, you know. It's been working for years, you know. So I don't know what to do.
Any specific error that you get when you try and send a message?
It says that password won't take.
And that's what you call Frontier about to verify that the password you're using is the one they're expecting?
Yeah. When I put my password in for the incoming POP server, it comes in. But when I then, but outgoing mail now asks for a password again,
right?
Suddenly, and so I put the password in again. It didn't. It was set up not to have to do that before, I believe.
Right.
And so I put the password in, and it still fails. It wants a new password.
Three things. First, for outgoing server, you're using smtp.frontier.com. Yeah.
Yeah, of course I was. I believe that's true. I'm trying to find it right now. Let's see now. Tools.
Right. Your username is your full email address, not just your username.
Right. Exactly. I signed all that, you know, like when they did that big a year ago. Your email address, I'm trying to find where it says username. I'm in server settings. Outgoing SMTP.
Right.
There's... server smtp frontiernet.net. Username is just, it's not the full username in there.
There you go. You see?
Okay. There it is.
It's got to be your full email address.
There's one thing to adjust.
Okay, that's it.
That's
sure.
Yeah. Start with that.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's what it was long ago, a couple of years ago.
No, I completely understand that. Yep. I completely get it.
I don't know, but. I'll get it corrected. Thank you so much.
There you go. Good luck.
Right.
We see that a lot. Somebody makes a minor change.
And for security reasons, Frontier made that change so that you have to prove that you're somebody who's allowed to use their servers to send out mail. And that was in response to a lot of spam.
Right, and it's actually a good thing that they did that. But somewhere along the line, they changed from just the username to the full thing. I suspect what happens is they bought another smaller ISP, and so, you know, there could be two Dennises.
Yeah, it sounds like they also got involved with like CityLink and CTAS and Neuworth and Epix and, you know,
GVNI. So while you obviously can't have the same email address as somebody else on Frontier in terms of the name.
Right.
You know, there could be one Dennis on Frontier, Dennis on one of the others.
New North,
So right. Now you need the whole thing. Now I get it. All right. Our next caller is Tim from Webster, New York. Welcome, Tim. What's up?
Yes, hi. You guys had mentioned in passing something about faster solid-state drives.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, I'm new to that, so I was wondering if you could expand on that a little bit.
All right. So solid-state drives. Up until now, hard drives have literally been metal platters that spin at several thousand RPMs and live inside your computer. And laptop computers have had these, and desktop computers have had these.
And
forever. They've been like that for decades.
They're basically just a disk coated with rust.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if you remember record players, where you had a disk that would spin around and a needle that would follow along, hard drives weren't that much different. They had a magnetic head that would float ever so closely, but not touching, to those... those platters. And the way to increase the speed of that was to increase the speed of the platters to make
or
them
get
spin
more
faster.
Platters.
Right, or get more of them. And the way you increased the storage size was you made them more sensitive so that they could store more stuff on a given platter. So that was fantastic. But those are they're susceptible to all sorts of problems. They don't handle vibration very well. They don't handle heat very well. They have a lot of things that you have to worry about. with them. And they're mechanical devices. They have actual moving parts inside. So with the advent of flash storage and the capacity growing in flash storage, companies have decided to take a large amount of storage, put it together, and put a connector on it that looks just like a hard drive connector, and it's called an SSD, or a solid-state drive. There are no moving parts in it. It uses a little bit less electricity, and it's just not as susceptible to all the physical limitations.
Head crashes.
Sure. All those problems.
Platters failing, the click of death.
Right.
And one of the other advantages is that you can get information to and from that device far, far more quickly than you can in any other way.
No moving parts.
So the problem is
they're referencing that then in the marketing, the SSD thing then, aren't they?
Yep.
This is a little over my head. So is it safe to say if I see that SSD in my computer shopping that it's likely going to give me a faster drive?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The short version, yes.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Awesome.
It is also much more expensive.
Yeah.
It's coming down.
That's what I thought. Okay.
It's coming down, but it's nowhere near the bargain basement prices that you can get for traditional drives right now.
Right. So if you want speed, you certainly can pay for it.
Okay. And that's the direction everything's going in, do you suppose?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And for several reasons. One is because the price is coming down. But also because the laptops are now contending against tablets.
Right, and tablets have used this flash storage since their inception.
Right, and so they're much faster than laptops, so laptops are trying to catch up in any way they can.
Okay, I might not be on the same track here, but how does this compare or relate to i5 versus quad-core?
It doesn't.
Those are two separate things. The i5 and quad core are related to the processing power,
right.
The computation power of the computer, and we're talking more about the data storage capabilities.
Yes. I understand. Okay, I'm all set. That was great. Thanks, guys. I appreciate everything you do.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yeah, the nice thing about SSDs is that you can take an SSD and put it into an older computer and really, really perk up the performance of that machine.
Yep. Yeah, I did that with an old laptop that I had, and everybody was saying, what did you do to your laptop? Yeah. It's so much faster now.
Yeah,
I replaced the drive. It was not cheap, particularly when I did it, but you know what? It was well worth it for that machine to keep running.
Well, like I say, there's no moving parts, less to wear out, so you know, it's a win-win all the way around. Yep. You know what I mean?
It's one of the things that makes I've got the $250 Chromebook from mm-hmm. Samsung. That's one of the things that makes it boot up from a cold, dead boot in 8 seconds.
Yeah.
You know,
it's just there.
Boom,
it doesn't have
up
to,
it comes.
Right. Remember the old days when I remember my 300 gig hard drive? You just turn it on, you hear.
Yeah.
You hear it
sounded
start
like
whirring
a jet
up.
Engine
yeah.
spooling up. Yeah.
Yeah. You knew, all right, yep, it's booting up.
It's trying to get from
and
zero.
And you might
to
as well go get
72.
A cup of coffee because
it's
going to take that long.
Well, back in those days, again, it was monochrome screen. Hello?
Sure. I seem to have one on. It's back to color now on the Hangout.
Yeah, SSDs are fantastic. The prices are starting to come down. I've been trying to keep an eye on the 512 gigabyte models, and I've seen the prices drop below $400. And I'm excited to try and jump on those once the price gets a little bit lower.
Well, like I said, those drives, though, that's what they're using in, you know, all the tablets and everything else. And
one of the things we have to be aware of course, is they have fewer read-write cycles than a hard drive.
Right.
Yeah, they don't necessarily have
trade-offs.
The lifestyle.
Right.
So
there's trade-offs
sure
with anything.
Make sure you've got good backups.
Always have good backups.
But it's so fast that, boy, it makes that price start to look pretty cheap when you think about all the extra stuff you can get done.
See, that's just another reason to have the Google Drive. Anything that's important, you back up. We've gotten that, you know, I meant to. Well, now there's no excuse. You can sit there and have it sync, and it does it automatically for you, so you don't even have to think about it.
Yep.
You know?
In fact, now with the new sound bites, after the fiasco and debacle of the last one, I personally am backing this up automatically every night to my Dropbox. And I could do it to Google Drive if I paid for another piece of software, but I'm not going to pay for it when my Dropbox works fine.
Right.
So hopefully we will not ever have that problem again. And for those of you who don't like the theme, suggest one. I'll be happy to try a different theme if you will suggest it to me. We are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Dennis Worcester, who came in and did yeoman duty at the last minute, even though he didn't bring the donuts. I want to thank Mike for sitting here and trying to figure out what the hell it is we do. Don't go away, because the best German music you will hear all week is about to come up, because George is in his house ready to play. I don't think it's German hip-hop this week. I'm pretty sure it's not. He's in das house, not in the his house. And we'll be back next week with more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.